The federal government has agreed to release one of the largest indexes of federal government data. It's one of the biggest databases in the world. The Office of Management and Budget will fulfill a Freedom of Information Act request filed last December, more than a year ago, by the Sunlight Foundation. For more on what data is going to be covered, we turn to Sean Vitka. He's a federal policy manager at the Sunlight Foundation. Sean, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so this data is being turned over to Sunlight on the threat of a lawsuit, I understand.
Yeah, so it was really kind of, we were days away from filing, but we reached out to them and let them know that we were pursuing, you know, additional legal options. I guess that got the word through. And they responded finally after about 14 months. We had actually appealed internally through the agency, but they didn't actually respond.
And so you didn't get a refusal, you just got a non-response these past 14 months?
No, so we got a refusal from the initial request, which was December 2013. It took them, I think, about 8 months, maybe nine, to respond to that. And for that, it just said, we're not going to give these to you.
All right. So what was it you were asking for?
So about a little over a year ago, agencies were required to start submitting to OMB something called an enterprise data inventory. And I like to call them indexes because it's a little bit more understandable. Effectively, it's just a listing, a catalog of all of the data assets, that's the term they use, that an agency holds. What it means is that instead of just looking at the list of items that an agency already publishes, we can actually begin to understand the comprehensive wealth of information that government holds, that agencies hold, and what they're publishing and what they're not publishing.
So you might be able to say, one way to put that would be the difference from what you can get at data.gov versus what is actually out there somewhere.
Precisely. Data.gov is a great service, and we want to see it thrive. But we also, as the public, need to have an informed opinion about what's getting released and what's not getting released and which agencies are doing a good job, which agencies aren't. And ultimately, it's pretty much, it's just bad data hygiene to not know what you know. And so it's really important that agencies are doing these, creating these indexes, well.
And so now, just getting back to data.gov for a minute, there's a couple of hundred data sets in there, and the data sets that are in there have to be machine readable databases, I guess you would say. Are you looking for just those, or are there more sets of data that might not be machine readable that agencies have?
So we will know more about that when we find out how agencies have defined the term data asset, because that's what they're instructed to catalog. But broadly speaking, eventually these indexes, which are growing and have to be updated quarterly, eventually these really should be able to be the index, should combine to form the index of government information.
And so you're not...
ultimately, everything.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, just ultimately everything. Sorry about that.
So what you're looking for then is the metadata about what the government actually has, but are you also asking for the data itself or just the pointers or the list of what data they do have?
Yeah, so at this stage, it's just the list itself. We're hoping that with access to these indexes, FOIA requesters, for instance, in the future, won't have to go to an agency and say, give me everything you know about cows. They can go into the index and say, you produced a daily update on milk prices. And here it's referred to as this, and that's the thing I want. We're hoping in the long term that will reduce the amount of time that agencies have to spend looking for every particular record that might be relevant to a particular request, things like that. Ultimately, it's about creating a more streamlined system.
And so you went at this through the Office of Management and Budget. Did they give a reason initially for not fulfilling it?
No, they responded effectively. What they said was agencies are the ones who get to determine whether or not these indexes should be public, which to some extent is true. But that would mean that the public's going to about 24 agencies. Submitting individual FOIA requests and potentially threatening, to litigate or in fact litigating with each and every one of them.
Well, that leads. I was going to say that leads to two questions. One, did you try the agencies individually for their data indexes?
Yeah, so, I mean, fortunately, FOIA is a, you know, strong statute, so we didn't have to, and OMB recognized that and was ultimately, as we see now, willing to work with us. But we did, in fact, go to four specific agencies and issued requests to them individually. Department of Transportation was one of them. We are pretty proud of Department of Transportation's data work and data ambitions. They actually already released their enterprise data inventory online as their public data listing. They're the only agency that does it. But when we requested it from them, it just said, yeah, here's the link. When we requested from state commerce, and I believe we also requested from Homeland Security, we didn't even hear back from two of them, I don't think.
Well, not surprised at that one. And I guess my second question is that by going to OMB, I mean, this is the OMB that has been touting transparency and has been really the policy leader in all of this for the past 6 years. So did you sense a little irony in their response to this particular FOIA request?
I sense some irony in the wait. I think the wait time was a little bit unnecessary. And, you know, that's a big part of it. But ultimately, the fact that they're willing to come to the table and work with us, and I've been on the phone with them a couple times since they decided to comply, I think a lot of it is really just what you see often in agencies, which is kind of a dissonance between, you know, the amazing data advocates that we have and some of the FOIA personnel who are often also, you know, good advocates for transparency, but are operating in a different context and, you know, might be more protective of information or less understanding of the value of something like an index of data.
And in asking for the enterprise indexes of data that each agency has, the inventories you weren't asking for volumes of information. I mean, this would have been a relatively easy one to fulfill, I'm guessing.
Well, one would hope. The truth is, and this is actually one of the most important reasons why we want access to these indexes, if agencies are doing them well, it shouldn't be much of a lift at all. Now, with that said, I understand that there are probably a number of people who, you know, are going to be forced to work some extra time, and, you know, we appreciate that. But when we get access to them, we'll be able to look at it and say, look, this should have been like an hour of work because you should have just been able to say, don't reveal this field, and, you know, moved on and sent it out. But if it's kind of a mishmash, if they're producing it in a way that's not easily manipulatable, it's going to be harder for them. But the truth is they're going to need to fix it at some point, and it might as well be now.
And have you seen the enterprise data indexes yet? Have you actually physically received them?
No, so we should get them in early March, but we do know what they're going to look like, or we at least know what they should or could look like, because the Department of Transportation already publishes theirs. Again, it's the only agency that does. But it's going to be a bit of a data dump when we find it.
We're speaking with Sean Vitka. He's a federal policy manager at the Sunlight Foundation, which was just about to sue the Office of Management and Budget for these enterprise data inventories. So you're expecting something like a gigantic spreadsheet? Is that the format that they take?
So we specifically requested either JSON or CSV formats. CSV is the most similar maybe to an Excel sheet. With that said, we also made sure that OMB would be able to provide it to us, you know, so that we could look at each agency's index as opposed to just some giant, you know, singular spreadsheet, which would have made parsing it a little bit difficult. But ultimately, yeah, it's probably going to be a giant spreadsheet.
All right. And while we have you, I wanted to ask you about the fact that there are two FOIA enhancement bills, one from the House and one from the Senate, and they're not quite the same. But they both seem to really be bipartisan and pushing ahead the strength of the original FOIA law. What's your assessment of these two bills?
Well, so they're unquestionably bipartisan, and it's really, I think, you know, on the public interest side, we're all ecstatic to see that both chambers are moving really quickly. They're taking it very seriously. If you followed the FOIA reform, and I'm sure you did, November of last year, everything just ran to a close time-wise. It was very difficult. Having staff and offices and senators and representatives take this very seriously now, and to the point where they're introducing both bills, this early in the term, tells us that there's going to be movement this year. There's going to be a lot of movement. And as far as the two bills, they're mostly the same, almost entirely. What we saw is the House made a lot of progress. Last year, they had introduced their own version of the bill. This year, they made a lot of progress and have caught up with the Senate in terms of reforms that it would actually achieve. And the biggest difference is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we see a couple of provisions that are stronger in the Senate. For instance, there's a fee provision that is great in the Senate version. The House doesn't have, but on the flip side, the House has a slightly more significant reform of the Exemption 5, which is a particular exemption within FOIA. Basically says that you can't withhold documents that constitute working law, which is a really good rule. we want to see that passed. So I think we're happy that both bills are out there, and we're hoping that the strongest possible combination of the two of them passes soon.
And so if that were to happen, what would be the main benefits to people that operate, you know, FOIA requests?
I think the most important thing is reforming B5, Exemption 5. What the reason I think that that's the biggest issue is there's been a spike in use of B5 in the last few years. I think in 2013 there were over 80,000 uses of it by the federal government. And what it says is that if the short, easiest way to explain it is if it's a draft document or if it's a deliberative document, you don't have to reveal it, and the entire document counts as that. So you don't get like this itemized redaction like you do with national security. Instead, you get entire pages and volumes, including the CIA's secret history of the Bay of Pigs, for instance, which is a 40-year-old document that we can't find because they have it labeled as a draft.
Wow. So, yeah, so a draft, in the modern era, could the concern be that even though it's a draft, there's a lot of, with Microsoft Word, for example, if that's what they were using, you could see thinking and drafting and changing and maybe people typing in something sarcastic and then erasing it that maybe the agencies wouldn't want anyone to see because it didn't end up being relevant.
So, to some extent, that kind of a thing can be redacted under exemptions, and it can be fair, and you can take away a part of it. You know, you can censor a particular comment, or you can remove something. I would say that anything 40 years old doesn't really deserve to be protected, and I don't know that as taxpayers we want to spend money on government lawyers to defend the right of an agency to keep a sarcastic comment made by somebody who left office 20 years ago. But I would give an example. There was one document which was a printout, I think it was the State Department had, and it was a House resolution designating Pakistan as a state sponsor of terror. And I believe this happened in 2008, something along those lines. And when it was produced, it was sent to the National Security Archives. It had a note on the side that that was redacted. Nobody knew why, but it said B5. They sued over it. They wanted to know what it said. And it just turns out that somebody had marked on the side, what a load of crap, I think was exactly what it was.
Yeah, and that's the thing that makes history so rich.
Right. And we need to know that. We need to know sure. That the State Department thinks the House of Representatives is wrong about Pakistan being a potential location, for instance, for Osama bin Laden, which turns out wasn't so crazy.
All right. Sean Vitka is a federal policy manager at the Sunlight Foundation. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Sean.